I'd like to mention, first of all, that this is a symposium that was held at SWCS during the summer in July, and it's being held here as well. It's a symposium that is co-sponsored by Soil and Water Conservation Society and the Soil Science Society of America, Division S6, I guess, or Division S6, huh? And so we're going to continue now in our session with farm-level accounting of greenhouse gas emissions. Can farmers be the new carbon accountants? With Keith Paustain.
Sorry, Mr. No, that was perfect. Thanks, Warren, and thanks for all of you for coming here. So, yeah, we're going to see if, I guess, if farmers want to take on a new job, you know. Who knows? Well, first, before I launch into this, let me first acknowledge a large number of colleagues, both at the university as well as in NRCS and ARS, who've been working on this effort as part of a longer-term development of systems for this kind of thing over a number of years. So I'll acknowledge others besides just the co-authors here on this particular paper at the end of the talk. So by way of background, I guess I wanted to start off and talk about, I think, some points that are, you know, I guess obvious to most of us, but maybe not to everyone, and kind of see where that leads us in a logic chain. And the first point then is really that agriculture is a significant greenhouse gas source, okay? It's most people, not us, but others say, well, it's all fossil fuel. That's important, but you know, agriculture makes up, together with land use in general, if we bundle land use activities in general, it's about 30% of the total greenhouse gas emissions currently. And probably a lot of folks in our science that aren't intimately involved in the greenhouse gas world, if you will, probably also don't realize that agriculture has been assessed as having one of the largest mitigation potentials relative to, you know, other major economic sectors. So, and basically it's in the top three according to the most recent fourth assessment that IPCC put together, so only second to the building sector and the energy sector. So it looks like from those two, you know, overarching points that, gee, agriculture ought to be a huge player in this whole business about greenhouse gas mitigation. Well, you know, what is the current status, though? And it's something a bit different from that, which is going to be kind of the underlying part of my talk today. And, you know, I think we could say that right now agriculture is kind of off the table with respect to the existing kind of international mitigation programs like the European Trading System or the Kyoto and the Clean Development Mechanism. We did have a system here that many of us are familiar with, the CCX, which has now been discontinued. It was a voluntary system involving a number of corporations. Agriculture was included as an offset, but there was quite a bit of criticism from some parts about the agricultural components there. There's some movement now in you know, the voluntary market space, which is a pretty diverse and kind of hard to get your hands on, but it's still fairly slow. The new California system is kind of the big headlines, if you will, in this area. They are going to include agriculture, but that program is still kind of under development, and it's unclear exact extent of which agricultural offsets will be included. And, you know, internationally, the FAO, World Bank, lots of others are quite interested in including agriculture, but it's still, you know, what future agreements are we going to have? We don't know that. There's a lot of uncertainty. And so part of this, what I would say, part of this disconnect, or, you know, I think a lot of us understand why this disconnect, why isn't agriculture right now a big player? And I think it kind of comes down to issues about whether or not agriculture can provide reductions that have a, I guess I'll say, an environmental and an economic integrity that is trusted and believed by others. So can we design systems and can we have mitigation programs involving agriculture where we know that the reductions are real and that those mitigations can maintain environmental quality? Okay, so what are some of the issues with that, you know, the reality, if you will, of agricultural mitigation options? And some of you may or may not be familiar with some of these terms. I apologize. I'll kind of throw them out there. But one issue is referred to as leakage, and that's basically where you're doing a greenhouse gas mitigation effort, but what you do in one place causes an increase in emissions to occur somewhere else. So that's an issue with particularly land use related things, but particularly land use change, so things like forest conversion to agriculture or agriculture conversion to forest, something like that. I would actually say that it's kind of a non-issue for a lot of cropland management practices, and certainly compared to things like the efforts for reduced deforestation and degradation, the RED programs, much more concerns there, I think, with respect to leakage. Permanence is another one of these issues. So if we sequester carbon, how do we assure that it stays there for a long time? That's certainly an issue with any kind of biological sequestration. But I would argue that there are some, you know, fairly effective ways to deal with that. So I think perhaps the key issue in all this is really, it comes down to kind of quantification, and that is, can we measure and monitor and verify greenhouse gas mitigation in the agricultural sector in a way that's reliable and cost-effective? So that's kind of what I want to talk about then. And if you envision a kind of an idealized quantification system, what are some of the attributes you want? Well, of course, you have to have accuracy and precision that's acceptable for your purposes and to know what the uncertainty is. It needs to be applicable at, you know, regional and national scales. You don't want systems that are, you know, all kinds of different systems working everywhere. But at the same time, we know there are lots of local effects in terms of how management systems and different soils and different cropping systems influence greenhouse gas emissions. So it has to be locally specific. Also, flexibility. What we do on the landscape interacts and affects lots of different processes, lots of different source categories. Because agriculture and agricultural activities are important for not only carbon dioxide, but also methane and nitrous oxide, and sometimes those can go, you know, in opposite directions depending on what you do, we have to have systems that can do that full greenhouse gas accounting. And then they have to be cost effective. The measurement monitoring costs have to be a relatively small portion, if you will, of the value that's generated. Okay, so if we want to think about the managers on the farm and we're trying to engage them, change their behaviors, so how do we approach then quantification that captures this flexibility and local scale, et cetera, accuracy? Well, you know, the thing that you would immediately say is let's go and do the direct on-farm measurements. And, you know, that would be a terrific jobs program, right, for our graduate students. We could really put some guys to work. It's kind of fun, too, you know. Most of you, I see lots of guys out here that do this kind of stuff. But, you know, the reality, unfortunately, is that really for a lot of fluxes, it's simply not really possible or practical outside a research environment to do that kind of quantification. And then even where it is potentially practical for some things, and, you know, I'll throw out, you know, soil carbon changes, I think is, you know, one area. But it also can be potentially very costly and other QA concerns to deal with. So I would say that the alternative to that is really this, you know, practice-based methods. involving models is, I think, the sort of the dominant paradigm going forward for this sort of thing. So what are some of the advantages there? And I think, you know, I had this thing, this is kind of where the farmers are the accountants, okay? The idea that potentially we could have farmers doing self-reporting and engaging in this system at that level, you know, and that's going to be kind of through the rest of the talk one of the major themes. If we have these practice-based methods, you know, it simplifies monitoring in a lot of ways because you're really looking at monitoring the implementation of certain kinds of practices. So we could potentially use remote sensing, you know, field visits. Lots of farmers are involved with USDA programs. People are already looking at what they're doing. So that's all good. In order for this to work, though, it's really important that we have, you know, good, well-tested models that, you know, that we have some confidence in. And not only that, but I think, you know, this is sort of a relative thing, right? But going forward, you know, this models that are sufficient to do the job have to go hand in hand with kind of a what I'll call an investment in strategic measurements to support this whole effort. So it's not just a go out and just you all the models. Well, so looking at this idea, so if we want to have farmers at the farm level contribute information that we can use to estimate greenhouse gases, a lot of folks have thought, you know, gee, that's a pretty good idea. And in fact, there's been kind of an explosion of activity the last few years in terms of people developing calculators that normal people, you know, not the eggheads, some of whom I see in the audience here that can do that, but, you know, the normal folks can do. And Caroline Deneff, who works with us, you know, did a nice review about 6 months ago, and here's just, you know, a list of some of the things that have been developed. And if you look at a sort of a timeline here in terms of numbers of tools that are released per year, you know, there really wasn't much before about 2000, and then a little bit here, and then really the last 3 or 4 years, I haven't updated this 2011, but, you know, there's a lot of interest, a lot of activity going out there in terms of these kind of greenhouse gas calculators. So I think it's a pretty exciting thing. You know, when we did this review a few months ago, we also said, let's look at how these how do they sort out? There's obviously a lot of different people doing different things, different needs. So we put together this diagram here, which basically has two axes. So one is the source categories and the degree of integration within the system. So if they have either few or many, and that can be different gases, different different processes that cause those gases. And then down on this axis is kind of the approach. Is the approach a more inherently kind of empirical emission factor approach, or one that maybe uses more dynamic, like process-based models? And then also looking at kind of the implementation. How are these calculators delivered? You know, how many are available on the web that you go on and you can use them? You can do a download of an Excel, or maybe you have to download something else. So that's the kind of the color scheme here. Obviously, I don't have time to go through very many of these, so I was going to focus on really talking a little bit about four of them. One is the Cool Farm tool, which is includes basically all the source categories you can imagine, but using more or less an empirical approach, and folks at Unilever and Pete Smith and his group at University of Aberdeen have been the main drivers on this particular tool. The Farming Systems Greenhouse Gas Emissions Calculator, Neville Miller is going to be talking next. Probably some of this is going to be in his talk. This is a system that's been developed at Michigan State University, himself and Phil Robertson and Peter Grace, and probably also another cast of thousands. And this is a really, you know, if you haven't been to this website, it's a very elegant, beautiful map of the U.S., very simple to use. But it's quite a sophisticated tool in the sense that it uses a dynamic simulation model, the Socrates model that Peter Grace has developed, along with a more empirical N2O model that they've developed there. And then my group has been working over the years in developing this kind of this COMET series, which stands for Carbon Management and Evaluation Tool. And so I'll talk a little bit about these. And just to kind of, I guess, walk you through first what our own group has been doing. We started back a few years ago, produced this thing called COMET for Voluntary Reporting as part of the 1605B. It was released a number of years ago, is still active on the web. But what was unique about that is we were able to implement the dynamic sentry model in running in real time in the system. But it was really a focus on cropland and grassland soil carbon, but also energy emissions, fossil energy emissions, using the NRCS energy tool. More recently, last year, we released kind of an updated version of COMET called COMET 2.0. The main distinctions with that was we made quite a bit of improvement in terms of the management systems that are available, particularly adding things like agroforestry and orchard perennial crops. A number of folks have worked on that. But we also added N2O emissions, but using essentially a meta model that was developed from a large number of dynamic simulations using the Descent model that Bill Parton and Steve DelGrasso at ARS have been developing over time. Just to give a quick kind of a overview of COMET 2.0, basically the homepage looks like that. You hit that button if you want to run it. And it is designed as a set of pull-down menus. You identify your location, how many parcels, either parts of fields or entire fields that you do, and then you essentially go through and you get interrogated. It's kind of like filling out your income taxes, or maybe a little easier than that. But your soil type and what your management systems are, and you loop back through here, and then you get a calculation for all the parcels, if you will, that you've added. So it's not fundamentally different in some ways than COMET VR was in terms of the workflow. We're presently working on a new system though, which is quite a bit different, and I'll just take a minute. It's still under development, but we're going to be releasing it early next year in the springtime. What's different about COMET Farm is really about three things. One is it uses a fully spatial interface, including things like the web soil survey, and I'll just show you what that looks like in a second. The other part is now we're going to be using real-time dynamic simulations with a Descent model for both carbon and nitrous oxide, and then eventually, probably a little bit down the road, of methane as well. I think the most important part really is the fact that we now are directly integrating livestock emissions as well as an expanded energy module. So I'll just walk you through a little bit what that looks like. Again, it won't really be available for most people on the outside until probably March of next year. This is kind of the home page. Also, what's different here is we're allowing people to register, and the reason why is that you may want to go into the system and archive some of your data and then go back and do it. We're asking for quite a bit more data to be supplied, if you will, to do these estimates. But you can also, we'll be able to use the system, just go in, use it, your data's not stored, nobody knows anything. We're working with NRCS to make sure that the data is going to be secure and private. Again, you go into COMET Farm, you'll be able to choose, do you want to do full greenhouse gas accounting, or do you want to do some aggregate, do you just want to look at your livestock, just want to look at crop production, energy use, etc. This is basically what the spatial data interface looks like, so it's again a sort of a Google Earth. We've also got that you can overlay Surgo data then, which essentially once you've selected fields, it's overlaid with the soil map, and then it's using the attributes, the unique attributes for each field and each soil type in the calculations. We've got some different tools over here where you can either draw a circle if you know, if you're good with a mouse, a square, whatever shape you want. You can also identify parcels by points and then state the area associated with that, and it makes an assumption about the spatial orientation of that. when you come in, then once you've defined your locations, it basically you go through a series of inputs to define the historic management, what you're currently doing, and what you do in the future. The historic management prior to 2000 is very similar to Comet VR. You essentially answer some questions from pull-down menus. What's different is from Comet 2.0 now is that from 2000 onward, you have the capability of putting in each year's management data, specifically for what it is in that particular field. And so you basically go through a series of inputs driven by these pull-down menus to define, each year's management. One of the other things about it is that, for example, so as you've gone through and you put in information about your crop selection and planting date, tillage, et cetera, you get here to irrigation, or also for these other ones, that some of the inputs that you, some of the information you supply here is also used in the energy calculation, but it's all, it's all done endogenously. So then you begin to build your system over here. This is obviously could potentially be pretty laborious, so one of the things we've done is also there's a number of different tools that you can define a crop and then a cropping system, and if that's applied in different fields, you can copy different years and you can construct that and apply those to whatever individual fields that you're doing. And then once you've done that, you can go through and define your future management. So certainly the crop input side of things is more complex, but much more flexible. You can say and record exactly what you're doing. So we think this will be important if we really want to try to have a high degree of precision in predicting, at this scale. So that's kind of a background, and then, you go through here and you can go on to your livestock management, et cetera. So to finish up now, that's again sort of a preview of the Comet Farm coming out next year. And I showed this at the Soil Water Conservation Society meetings, where we've started to do a little bit of kind of cross comparison of some of these different tools to kind of see what that can tell us. Here's an example from the Kellogg Biological Station, LTER, in Michigan, and one in eastern Colorado at the Ardec site. And we chose these two long-term experiments as kind of places where we had some good measured data so we could do an interesting comparison and have some confidence in the data there. They are similar in the sense that the particular experiments we looked at were really looking at a tillage contrast, okay, both a conventional to no-till system, but somewhat different rotations in the two different places. And they've been established for, the KBS LTER since 89 and the Ardec since 1999. And so we took the Cool Farm tool, the Farming Systems Greenhouse Gas Estimator, and Comet 2.0, and pretended that these experiments were a farmer's field, okay? So we put in the amount of nitrogen added and the tillage and what the crop rotation was, and then each of the systems, depending on its location, you specify something about the soil properties, et cetera. So here's a summary diagram of these three tools. Over here, you've got tons of carbon dioxide equivalent. So it's looking, in this case, at both carbon and nitrous oxide per hectare per year. And the no-till is shown here in red, and the conventional till is shown here in blue. And the way this is done is it's essentially saying, okay, pretend I'm a farmer doing conventional till. Now I'm going to do adopt no-till. What's that do for my greenhouse gases? I'll explain one more thing. The farming systems tool here has two different options for N2O measurements. I think Neville will probably explain that a little bit more. But as I understand it, the Tier 1 is more of a kind of an IPCC default, whereas the Tier 2 uses an emissions model that they developed based on studies up in Michigan and doing measurements in a number of different farms. And it predicts generally, in most cases, higher levels of N2O than the Tier 1. But that's the only difference between those two. So the carbon's going to be the same. So just quickly looking at this to see, and sort of interested in just saying how different are these models? Well, the negative things mean a sink, or a reduced emission, or a net uptake in the case of soil carbon. So two of the, these two models both predict a small carbon sink if you adopt no-till here, whereas the Cool Farm tool predicts quite a large carbon sink with the adoption of no-till there under those circumstances, running the models. N2O is, different. The big difference here is, the Tier 2 method predicts much higher emissions than any of the other models. And also there's some differences here in terms of, embodied fertilizer emissions and stuff like this. But, they give a fairly different assessment, where Cool Farm shows an overall, big mitigation, and the other ones show, much smaller, and relative to the conventional till, they would suggest that they're all an improvement. At the Arctic site in eastern Colorado, again, some differences that, but somewhat the same pattern, actually in both cases here. Both the Comet and the farming systems, somewhat higher uptake of soil carbon with no-till adoption, and Cool Farm even more, and some really differences here, much more difference than in the KBS scenario for what the systems are predicting in terms of N2O. Okay, so as a kind of a summary, I guess, how much time do I have? A couple minutes? Okay, a couple minutes. Let me try to wind up here. As a summary, this is looking at sort of if you take the adoption scenario minus the baseline, what are these tools predicting in terms of changes in greenhouse gases? And over here, the blue is the actual calculated based on observations. Okay, so this is for KBS. So KBS would say, yeah, we have measurements that suggest a small improvement. And two of the models, both the farming systems and Cool Farm, that tended to underestimate that a little bit. The Cool Farm, in this case, though, way overestimated the benefits. Although you go to Ardec, and here the Cool Farm did much better. Comet Farm, Comet VR, kind of in the middle here, and the farming systems is a greater underestimation. So what does all this mean? Well, here's my take on it. I do think that undoubtedly, if agriculture is going to play a role in this space, really the robust quantification decision support tools are really crucial. There's a lot of activity going out there. The rate of development and what you can find and the web implementation of some of these complex systems, I think, is quite impressive. But I would also say that, at present, we've got more work to do. We've got to do more testing, more intermodal comparisons before we can really have as much confidence as we'd like going forward. Uncertainty is important. I mentioned earlier this idea of strategic on-farm measurements, and I think that's a really crucial point. So, yeah, we're not going to measure, the farmers aren't going to be measuring stuff, but we have to be doing that job in a coordinated way. And I think some of the things that are going on, certainly with the existing flux networks, the GraceNet and things like that that a lot of people here are involved with, I think the NRCS Rapid Carbon Survey is going to serve some of this function. And also NRCS has some activities developing a pilot on-farm carbon monitoring plots over time. So I guess the bottom line then is, can carbons be the new carbon accountants? Can farmers be? And I think the answer is yes. Maybe. I don't know. But we still have some work to do. So that's all, and I hope I've not gone too much over time. Well, this is pretty fundamental. For empirical models, by definition, they're going to apply within the regime that the measurements have been developed for, and as good as the measurements are, that is what you have. You know, I think the process-based models potentially have the can be much more general, much more robust. I don't know how many of you saw Rodney Venatira's talk earlier. You know, we've got issues with data and a lot of things to solve there, but I think I'm pretty optimistic. I think we're now got a critical mass of new information. There's enough people working on this that we will have the capability to improve the models at a higher rate. They're never going to be perfect, and therefore the important thing, I think, the really critical thing, is that we get better at quantifying the uncertainty in those more complex dynamic models. And that's not an easy challenge, but thanks.
Thanks.